that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe, and he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The seeds of all the planets in the universe were impregnated in the lotus on which Brahma was situated. All the planets were already generated by the Lord, and all the living entities were also born in Brahma. The material world and the living entities were all already generated in seedling forms by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Brahma was to disseminate the same seedlings all over the universe. The real creation is therefore called Sarga, and later on the manifestation by Brahma is called Visarga. Tad vilakho viyad vyapi pushkaram yad adhishthitam anena lokan praglinan kalpitashmita chintayat. Thereafter he saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe, and he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. So the creation is described here. The Vedic understanding is the real understanding, because Vedas are dealing with the absolute truth. Vedas are not dealing with the relative truth that generates from our sense perception. Actually, this material nature is a nature of relative reality, because here whatever we are perceiving are relative to our sense perception. Like a jaundiced person sees everything as yellow, here we are seeing things according to our diseased perceptions. And that's why different individuals perceive things in a different way. The same thing will be perceived by different persons in a different way. Like, we are sitting in this room, and I am seeing, although we all are situated in the same time and space, but still we can see that our perceptions are different from individual to individual. Like, I am seeing that wall of this room, and you all are seeing this wall of this room. So this is how we can see that how every individual is actually perceiving things from his own individual perspective. Another example has been given in that respect, that a child, the mother sees the child, and when the mother sees the child, her heart becomes filled with affection. And that affection fills her breasts with milk. And a tiger sees the same child and his mouth starts to salivate. So it's the same object, but two different individuals are perceiving the same object in a two different way. So this is the relative reality. Like, we can't deny the fact that the tiger has some perception of the child and the tiger has some reaction to that perception. Mother has some specific reaction, and different individuals that way are perceiving the same reality from their own individual perspective. But beyond everything, there is an absolute reality. And that absolute reality is not dependent upon our sense perception. The absolute reality does not need the support of our approval. We believe the absolute reality or not, the absolute reality will always stand as it is. The truth does not need the support of our agreement or approval. the truth can stand on its own feet. The sun comes up in the sky every morning. Now, sun's appearance and disappearance does not depend upon the approval of a blind man. If the blind man says that the sun is not there because I cannot see it, will not affect the reality of the existence of the sun. The same way, the absolute truth can stand on its own feet. It does not depend upon our approval or upon our acceptance of the truth. That's why the Veda very specifically described Achinto kholu je bhava na tam starkena jo jayet. That reality that is beyond our sense perception cannot be established by arguments. So at one point, argument has to be given up. Like Vedic wisdom, to some extent depends on, some branches of the Vedic wisdom depends on argument. But ultimately one has to give up that tendency to argue about the absolute truth. This was very emphatically, very clearly established, described or showed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his early age, he was a great logician. And logic is based on argument. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the greatest logician. No one could defeat Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could make yes to appear like no, and no to be yes. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nithai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was such a smart logician, naturally he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that Mahaprabhu could prove that the sun comes up in the west, and then he could disprove that the sun does not come up in the west. This is how expert he was. And at that time, Navadvip, the place of Mahaprabhu's pastimes, was very famous for its scholarship. And it was actually a place of Naya Shastra. It was a center of the branch of Vedic philosophy called Naya, which literally would mean in English logic. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and there were many great logicians there. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even in his young days, when he was just a 10-11-year-old boy, he was such a smart logician that he defeated everybody. Big logicians were defeated, and they were so afraid of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that when they saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming this way, they would avoid that road and take the other way, just to avoid him, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would challenge everybody. That, can you tell me why this is this and not that? And he would just force them to get into an argument, and then he would defeat them. One day actually Mahaprabhu had an encounter with Srivas Thakur. Mahaprabhu saw that Srivas Thakur was avoiding him. So Mahaprabhu just ran up to him and said, why are you avoiding me? So Srivas Thakur said that, Nimai, whenever we meet you, you just force us to get into some logical arguments called Nair Faki. Nair means logic, and Faki means the loopholes, you can say. The loopholes of logic. And this is how a great logician would defeat somebody with the loopholes of logic. And with the loopholes, he would make yes to appear like no, and no to appear like yes. So, and Srivas Thakur told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that you are simply wasting your time. We can understand that you are a great scholar, but actually the scholarship is meant for understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sheishe Vidyar Phal Janiho Nishchay Krishna Padopadme Jano Chitta Vritti Roy. Try to understand that the ultimate goal of all wisdom is to fix your mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. So Mahaprabhu very humbly admitted that, well, if you bless me, then someday that will happen, that I will also develop some Krishna bhakti. In Mahaprabhu's early pastimes, Mahaprabhu did not actually display that kind of devotion to Krishna. He was he was more of a scholar. And the great devotees used to think that if Nimai Pandit becomes a devotee, then it will be so wonderful. Then many, many people will become very respectful towards the process of devotional service. And Mahaprabhu very humbly would admit or submit that, well, if you all bless me, then someday maybe I'll become a devotee also. So this absolute reality cannot be understood by sense perception or the knowledge acquired by our sense perception. Because our senses are misleading. Our senses are actually perceiving things in a relative platform. Our five senses are interacting with the object, with the elements of the senses, and the objects of the senses are produced. And that is a relative reality. Really, reality that the way it appears to our senses, but it is not. Unless and until it is received, that knowledge is received from a bona fide source, we cannot possibly understand the realm of the absolute reality. That's why Prabhupada used to give the example of a frog trying to perceive the ocean. A frog from the well, no matter how much it tries to understand the vastness of the ocean in relation to the whale, he'll never be able to figure it out. Because a whale is whale and an ocean is ocean. So our material sense perceptions are relative to our senses, but Krishna is beyond our sense perception. Adhokshaja. Adhokshaja means beyond sense perception. Adhokrita, akshaja. Akshaja means that are produced by our sense perception. And adhokrita meaning which is left behind. The transcendental realm is beyond our sense perception. And we cannot enter into that region by means of our senses. So when we want to enter into that region, we have to enter with a mood of submission to a bona fide authority. And the highest authority, the most bona fide authority, is the Vedas. Because Vedas retain the message of the absolute reality. And here we can see the science, we can hear from this chapter, we can understand the science of creation. Like how creation of this, how this material nature was created, how these universes were created. Very graphically, very systematically, and very scientifically, that has been explained here. But unfortunately, the scientists cannot take advantage of this knowledge. So-called materialistic scientists, because they start from a wrong premise that everything must be experimentally verified. They say the science is experimentally verified facts. But how you are going to verify your experiments? First of all, when you are going to deal with a subject that is beyond our sense perception, beyond your sense perception, how can you ever experimentally verify that? With what instrument you are going to verify that? So that's why it is said that the transcendent, if you want to verify the science of Krishna, the science of the Vedas, then you have to verify it with intelligence. not with your senses, because senses will always mislead you. Like the way it has been described, the way mother of pearl appears to be like silver. When a person sees the mother of pearl and if he thinks that this is silver because it appears to be like silver according to his perception, then he will think that it is silver. The way a rope is mistaken to be a snake. So this is how our senses are always very, very misleading. So we cannot possibly analyze or experimentally verify the transcendental reality. The only tool that we have to verify or to get an inkling of an idea of its reality is the intelligence. Because of all our perceptions, of all our faculties, intelligence is the thing that which is closest to the realm of reality, closest to the transcendental nature. The intelligence, even beyond mind, is intelligence, and beyond intelligence is the spirit. That Bhagavad Gita describes that indriyani paran nahur indriyebhyo param mano manoshastu para buddhi. And what is the last line? And beyond that is, the beyond intelligence is the self. And self is the spiritual entity. So unless and until we take shelter of the Vedic wisdom, and it can be verified with intelligence, like Bhagavad Gita so wonderfully explains the reality of the spirit soul. Krishna, just in one verse, Krishna explained about the existence of the spirit soul and the temporary nature of the body. That the way the embodied soul passes from childhood to youth to old age, in the same way the soul will pass into another body. And we can see that although our body is changing constantly, but we do not change. Now what is that that does not change? What is that that is existing even beyond the body? Even when our body is inactive, even when the body is not functioning, still the soul remains. Like I'm sure in the West, many of you have different intoxicating experiences where you must have experienced how it feels like. Beyond body experience. And one devotee once told me also that he was being operated upon, and when he was under the anesthetics, and when he was under the spell of anesthetics, he actually moved out of your body, and he saw the doctors are operating upon his body. He saw the whole thing, and he was totally separate from his body. It's Sachinandan. I don't know whether he told you. He experienced the entire process of the operation, and he saw that how the doctors were operating upon his body. So this is how we can see that we have an existence beyond this body. Now what is that existence? And that is the reality, that is the spirit soul. And Krishna established that just by one verse. And if he just uses his intelligence, can understand that fact, can verify that fact. That yes, there was a time when I was 5 years old, and when I was 5, I had a different body. That body is not existing anymore. When I was 15, I had another body. When I was 25, I had another body. So although these bodies have changed, but still I am the same person. And I can relate when I was 5, when I was 15, when I was 25, and so on and so forth. So this shows that beyond this body I have an existence that is reality, that is unchanging. And that self of mine is unborn, eternal, everlasting, and it can neither be cut by any weapon, it can neither be burnt by fire, it can neither be moistened by air or by water, and it neither can be dried by air. So this, the indestructible aspect of me is my real self, and my existence is solely relative to that. I am because I am conscious, and that consciousness is coming from that indestructible spirit soul. So this is how, without intelligence, we can understand our spiritual existence, our spiritual nature, our spiritual reality. So that's why it is said that although only through intelligence we can get an idea of the spiritual nature. But again, with intelligence we cannot enter into the spiritual nature. That intelligence has to be transformed. And the transformation of our intelligence takes place through devotional service. Tesham shatato yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogantam jena mam upajantite. The transformation of intelligence, material intelligence, takes place through devotional service. And that's bestowed upon us by Krishna himself, through which we can go back to Krishna. So we can use our material intelligence to understand about the reality, about the spiritual reality. But then the ultimate the ultimate application of that intelligence is in surrender. The final act of this material intelligence is to surrender. That with the understanding that with intelligence we cannot understand the spiritual reality. So I have to give up that intelligence. I have to give up my individual endeavor to enter into the spiritual nature or understand the spiritual nature or to even perceive the spiritual nature. So through intelligence we surrender, which is called Sharanagati. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Jive Daya Kori Saparshad Shiyodham Saho Abhotori Ottanto Durlabho Prem Koribare Dan Shikhai Sharanagati Bhakotero Pran. The life and soul of devotional service is this surrender or Sharanagati. It says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very mercifully came down to deliver the conditioned living entities by bestowing his causeless mercy unto them. Jive Daya Kori, he appeared Saparshad Shiyodham Saho Abhotori. He appeared with his associates, with his abode, and Ottanto Durlabho Prem Koribare Dan, in order to bestow the very, very rare loving devotional service to the conditioned living entities. He came and he is teaching the process of surrender. So that is the last aspect of our material activity. With our material self, with our material mind, with our material intelligence, we have to surrender with the understanding that with this material means we cannot enter into the spiritual region. And when we surrender ourselves, then we become qualified to become engaged in devotional service. Actually, this surrender is like reaching the region of neutrality. There are two sides. If you take a graph, there is the axis. The axis is zero. And the left-hand side of the axis is minus, and the right-hand side is plus. We are in a negative nature. We are in a minus region. But if we want to go to the positive region, plus side, then we have to come to the point of zero. And in zero, in the zero axis, there is no negative. But if we keep pushing on, then we will go beyond the region of zero and come to the realm of positive nature. So if we want to enter into the spiritual nature, then we have to come to this total surrender, total inactivity of our material self. There is no material self actually. It's a misconception. When the self becomes involved in the material nature, then the self appears to be material. So total cessation of all kinds of material endeavor. And that total cessation of material activities is the point of neutrality. Neutral. No, neither minus nor plus. But from that point, we enter into the other realm, the spiritual nature. And here also it has been very wonderfully pointed out that how this creation, the seed of the creation was actually planted by Krishna himself, by Vishnu himself, in the form of sarga. Everything is there in this material nature due to projection of the spiritual energy. The material nature is actually a manifestation of the spiritual energy. The material nature is sustained by spiritual energy. And everything that has become manifest in the material nature is actually due to it, the presence of the spirit soul. And that's why the spirit soul is considered to be the final seed. The seed fructifies and grows from seedling into bigger and bigger into a tree, and then it produces more seeds and so on and so forth. So that the spiritual energy in the form of seed, which has been injected through into the womb of the nature by Vishnu through the medium of Sambhu, Lord Shiva. Actually, Vishnu does not directly get involved with the material nature. The via medium is Lord Shiva, Sambhu. And the spiritual energy is injected in the womb of the material nature through Lord Shiva. And that aspect, that spiritual aspect of creation is known as sarga, and from that Brahma manifests this universe, and then that manifested aspect becomes known as visarga. So this is the secret of material creation. In the next verses it has been further described how Brahma manifested 14 planetary systems. This material nature is actually a prison house. And in the prison house of this material nature, Krishna made arrangements, different kinds of prisoners. Some are very, very hardcore criminals. They are put into the lower planetary systems, and some are not so bad criminals. They are in higher planetary systems. And between this higher and lower planetary system, there is a gateway to get out of this material nature. And that is the Bhumandal, the middle planetary system. And in this middle planetary system, the gate is Bharatvarsha. Bharatvarsha means the land where Krishna consciousness is practiced. So, in the Bhumandal, a living entity gets a chance to perform devotional activities and thus get out of the material nature. From the lower planetary systems or from the higher planetary systems, one cannot get out. In order to get out, one has to come to the Bhumandala. And that's why it has been considered that human life is so precious. Because when we get a human life in the earth planet, we actually get a chance to get out of this material nature. And if we take full advantage by accepting the process of devotional service under bona fide guidance, Jai Shishi Gaur Nithai. If we accept the process of devotional service under bona fide guidance, then very easily we can get out of this prison house of material nature. And in this age, it has become very, very easy due to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to deliver all the conditioned souls. Whoever accepts this simple process of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in a spirit of Sankirtan, in a spirit of congregation, not individually aspiring for liberation, but collectively endeavoring to liberate the entire universe. When you develop that spirit, following the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following the footsteps of a real devotee of Krishna, then very easily we can get out of this bondage of material nature. So I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Yes. Yes. There's another way to go back to the spiritual sky is at the time of annihilation, at the time of total annihilation. Yes, and that is that is also a few, those who are almost purified. They along with Brahma go back to the spiritual nature. Then again the question is whether Brahma will make it. If Brahma doesn't make it, then they are in trouble also. Yes. No, it's the same. It's in fact, soul is emphasized as being spiritual element, non-material element. That's why the expression is used as spirit soul. The spirit is actually an adjective which is emphasizing the fact that soul came from the spiritual nature. Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, Brahmarata Prabhu. How can we explain that the Vedas are beyond imperfection? Yeah, because the Vedas are dealing with the absolute truth, and this knowledge has been given by the spiritual authorities, those who are also situated in the spiritual nature. And they are transmitting this knowledge as it is, like without making any rather presenting the spiritual science, describing the spiritual nature as it is. Now, to our material senses, there may be some discrepancies or there may be some differences or disagreements, but ultimately we have to understand that we cannot judge this knowledge with our material analysis. That's why Prabhupada so emphatically pointed out time and time again that every single word of the Vedas is truth and nothing but the truth. The apparent contradictions are due to our imperfect perception. And like as people often say about the contradictions in fifth canto, like the basic understanding is that are we perceiving the universe the way Sukadeva Goswami or Vasudev is describing? Are we seeing it from the same perspective? Like an ant is seeing this room and you are seeing this room, will the perception be the same? Not really, because the ant will see the room from his own limited perspective, whereas you will see it from your own higher perspective. So now if the ant says, whatever Brahmaratha Prabhu is saying is all lies, right? It'll be his foolhardy. So we have to understand that the Sukhdev Goswami's or Vasudev's perception, or the way from the perspective that they are describing this creation, is obviously different from ours. And because it does not fit with our sense perception or our sensual experiences, we cannot say that, well, they are wrong or they are lying. So that's why it has been described that one should not jump while reading Bhagavatam. He should start from first canto. And by the time he comes to the fifth canto, he'll have so much understanding about the spiritual reality that he will naturally accept every single word of fifth canto to be the truth and nothing but the truth. But if somebody jumps, then he'll get stuck in the fifth canto. And it is also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that fifth canto was Vasudev's trick to not to let the materially motivated people go beyond. Because a materially motivated person who is too much involved in the material nature, he will get stuck in the waves of the riddles of fifth canto. Right? And they will think that, fifth canto, it's all untruth, it's all mental concoction, and it's all contradiction. So I can't accept Srimad Bhagavatam. So ultimately what's happening, he is actually losing the opportunity to understand the transcendental subject. He's just stuck in the fifth canto. So it's actually an arrangement, a divine arrangement of Vasudev, that materially motivated people cannot go beyond the fifth canto to enter into the more intimate pastimes of the Lord.
Why is it?
Yes, subtle because it is because it's subtle. There are two sets of elements, gross, which is more, tangible by our senses. But there is some elements that are not perceivable by our senses. Like mind cannot be perceived by our senses. So it's subtle. Intelligence is subtle because they are beyond our gross sense perception. Yes, ma'am. Mind, the definition of mind is the antarendriya, the seat of our sense perceptions. You see, whatever we perceive through our five senses, they are transmitted to the mind, and the seat of the mind is the brain center. And all the nerves are actually converging into the brain center. So, and the nerves are actually carrying all the sense perceptions. So they carry it to the brain center, and the brain center is the mind, and mind is actually perceiving all the messages that are sent by the senses. And and mind is also the seat of memory. All that we experience are imprinted in the mind. And intelligence is the ability to make permutations and combinations between our experiences. All the experiences are there, and the intelligence is actually combining these experiences. Then what do you call intelligence? How will you define the intelligence? Will you call it spiritual? If you don't say it's not material, Yes, that is an. You see, everything is a reflection. Whatever you are seeing in the material nature is a reflection of the spiritual reality. There is a mind in the material nature, and there the counterpart of that material mind is there in the spiritual nature. The counterpart of intelligence also is there in the spiritual nature, and that is spiritual intelligence. That is spiritual perception, spiritual faculty to decide, to plan how we are going to become linked up with Krishna. There is a spiritual aspect of intelligence also, and ultimately, as you said, that there is the supreme intelligence, the intelligence of Krishna. There is supreme consciousness, that consciousness of Krishna is Brahmananda. Yeah. Actually, the person who is the exponent of the Vedic branch of Naya is Gautam, a sage called Gautam. And this Naya branch of philosophy actually is the first platform of the Gyanakanda section. And this branch analyzes that why we are suffering. The Karmakanda section indulges into material enjoyment. But then finally, at the end of Karmakanda, one realizes that in spite of my so many endeavors to enjoy, I'm still that same old miserable bum. So, I mean, I had been trying to enjoy so much. I wanted to become a king, I became a king. I wanted to become Indra, I became Indra. I wanted to become Brahma, I became Brahma. But still I am miserable. Now why am I miserable? So that why is answered through Naya branch of philosophy. And they actually conclude the cause of suffering in 21 different considerations. The first consideration that is the body is the cause of suffering. And the Buddhists actually took to that section of Naya and concluded the body is the cause of suffering, so get rid of the body, right, in order to mitigate your sufferings. But the Naya branch goes further and further beyond that consideration. The first consideration is the body is the cause of suffering. Then the five senses are the six senses are the cause of suffering. Then the six objects are the sense of the cause of suffering. Then six kinds of growth are the cause of suffering. Like one grows rich, one grows beautiful, one grows wise, and so on and so forth. In the material direction, there are six kinds of growth. So these are 3 sixes are 18 plus one, body 19. Then they analyze that the happiness is the cause of suffering. The concept of happiness is there, that's why the concept of suffering is there. And then they canalize that suffering itself is the cause of suffering. So this is how, with this 21 considerations, they analyze. And the conclusion is that this material nature is a place for suffering. The way one does not go to a prison house to enjoy, the same way no one comes to the material nature to enjoy. Everyone comes here to suffer. And the desire for enjoyment is actually an illusion. So this is the general topic of Naya branch of philosophy. No, it does not. No, it does. It is actually, basically it is atheistic. Buddhism is a very gross aspect of Naya philosophy, dealing with a very gross aspect. But the interesting part with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just coming to that. Actually, this Naya actually shows the way to analyze, or rather, you know, perceive things with an analytical perception. Now, at that time, during just before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the seat of this Naya Shastra was a place called Mithila, which is in the border of Bihar and Bengal. And they actually retained this Shastra of Naya, and they wouldn't let it go out. And that's why, you know, they had the supreme domination or monopoly over this branch of philosophy. Then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went to study there. Right? And actually they never allowed anyone to bring the puthis, the scriptures out, but copy it down, right. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya memorized all the scriptures, and he came, he wrote them down, and he established a new set, new seat of Naya philosophy in Navadvipa. And actually that's then when the pandits of Mithila got to know that, they sent some murderers to kill Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But when they came and met Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, they were totally transformed. And they said, they told him why they came there, and they told him that to go away somewhere, because they may not kill him, but they'll keep on sending more people, you know, to kill him in future, you know, because they were so upset, you know, these pandits of Mithila. So then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went to Katak and took shelter of King Pratap Rudra. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, I'll take Mahadruti Prabhu, he is raising. Yes.
I think I didn't understand what you were saying, that the intelligence is the means for verification. But also on the spiritual platform, there is means for verification, there is spiritual realization.
Yes, no, I mean that with all the material faculties that we have, of them only intelligence can somehow come near the border, analyze and touch that region. But that is, and I of course pointed out that with intelligence we cannot enter into that region. We have to give everything that is material and leave everything here and then enter into that nature. Yes, Maharaj. Right, yeah, right. Like the mind is transformed through devotional service, now through thinking of Krishna, manmana bhava madbhakta madhyaji, and then teshang satato yuktanam bhajatang pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam. This buddhi yogam is the spiritual intelligence.
But maybe I misunderstand, but even without the intelligence being transformed,
yeah, actually, yeah. Right. True, yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, I'm saying that, here, let me point out again, that I'm not saying that with intelligence one can enter into spiritual nature. But if one wants to understand the spiritual nature, then through his intelligence he can get an idea of the spiritual nature. Yes. Right. Yes. So what's your question? Right. 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 And Prabhupada is saying that the surrender is something like the child cries out for the mother, cries out, right? And the mother, no matter wherever she is, she runs to the child and picks him up. But if the child grows up, and he can take care of himself, then the mother does not really care for the child so much. So if we think that we can take care of ourselves, then Krishna will say, okay, take care of yourself. Right? But if we realize that we can't take care of ourselves, we are completely helpless, then Krishna's mercy comes down to pick us up. And devotional service is that. We are, that surrender, sharanagati is that, that we are totally incapable. We cannot do anything ourselves. Without Krishna's mercy, we are completely useless. Yogyota vichare kichu nahi pai, tomaro koruna shai. As far as my qualification is concerned, I have nothing. That is the mood of a devotee. I am totally unqualified. I do not have any ability to do anything. I am simply dependent upon your mercy. Still spiritual mercy. Right. About this concept, you see, about this concept, the what is most important is the disciplic succession, and the individual being transparent to the disciplic succession. The spiritual master may not be a superman, right? But if the spiritual master is submissive to his spiritual master, who is in a bona fide disciplic succession, then he is a bona fide guru. Actually, to look for a superman for guru is, I think, going to be a mistake. It will be misleading to look for a superman. So, in a guru, what we must see is how submissive he is to his spiritual master, how transparent he is to his spiritual master, how transparently he is conveying the teaching of the Guru Parampara. So that is the main criteria. Hmm? Yes.
I didn't understand the analogy, like surrender is at zero. It seems like surrender would be on a positive side, maybe only just on a positive side.
Yeah. But the positive, you see, Yes, but the thing is that just surrender alone is not everything. Beyond surrender is devotional activities. And that devotional activities lift one or transport one to the spiritual realm. You see, we give up all that is material, right? And come to the point where we do not have anything material. Say, let us try to, imagine this state. We do not have any more material desires, but at the same time we have not become engaged in spiritual activities. Right? Well, you can say that, because you can say that it's a stage of neutrality. Because unless and until one becomes engaged in devotional service, one does not become qualified to enter into the spiritual nature. Yes, ma'am. Pratikulla Shabdi. Right.
That's what surrender means, not to surrender enough. Surrender with so many activities.
Right.
Six, four, five activities. Then means, then it's
surrender. Yeah. No, actually, the way I was trying to point out is that we have our material activities, we stop all our material activities through the surrender. Then we come to the point of neutrality. Then we become engaged in spiritual activities. And that spiritual activities transport us to the spiritual nature. Over. Then that is sadhan bhakti platform. That sadhan bhakti platform. The sadhan bhakti platform is like, Prabhupada defined the sadhan bhakti platform is like getting into a lift. Right? You are not really climbing up the stairs yourself. You just got into the lift and you are not quite aware of the fact that you are being transported to the spiritual nature. But then when you realize that you have already been transported to the spiritual nature by being sheltered by a bona fide spiritual master, by being linked to a disciplic, bona fide disciplic succession, then the sadhana bhakti becomes transformed into spontaneous devotional service or prema bhakti. It's a reduction of material attachments. The clearing is, it's the material attachments, our offenses are reducing. But when all the offenses are eliminated, then it is pure state of chanting. And the wonderful thing about chanting of the holy name is that once the motion is set, once our offenses are started to reduce, the momentum is so great that it will naturally take us to the platform of liberation, that is becoming totally free from material attachments. But beyond this material attachments, total material attachments, is a region of devotional service which is full of bliss. And yeah, I'll take the rung. Yeah, then my question will be, does a pure devotee mean a superman? Well, actually that superman does not does not fly through the space and you know, display all kinds of such activities. A devotee is basically very humble. He may be very extraordinary, but he himself doesn't think that he is extraordinary, nor does he ever try to display that he is extraordinary. Yes.
Prabhupada said about himself, he said that he said, I am not perfect.
Right.
But because I am delivering the message of the all perfect,
right,
therefore the transmission is perfect.
Right.
And the example of the male man,
right,
such as the first attribute of the male
man.
And Prabhupada said that you chant 16 rounds a day and follow four regular principles, you go back to God. So someone who transmits that message, who follows that message and transmits it,
follows. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And
also,
the real thing is that we cannot approve the sense of which is an
Well, that's actually not a transcendent. I mean, Naya is one of the branches of Vedic philosophy. You see, these branches of Vedic philosophy help us to approach the transcendental nature, right? But they in themselves not always. I mean, apparently, you see, like you must have read from Bhagavad Gita, Traiguna Vishaya Veda and Nistraiguna Bhavarjana. It's apparent to the Vedic knowledge is dealing with the three modes of material nature, but one has to transcend those three modes to understand the real purport of the Vedas. The best attitude is to transform Maya into Yoga Maya. You see, Maya is. Well, now I understood your point. You listen. Maya is Krishna's energy, right? Maya has two aspects. in one aspect of Maya is the punishing aspect, and the other aspect of Maya is the helping aspect. Like, the example can be given is a policeman. The policeman beats the criminals, right, but helps a good citizen. So when we, but when we become engaged in, when we revolt against Krishna, right, then Maya punishes us in the form of Mahamaya. But when we become devotees of Krishna, then the same Maya helps us to become engaged in His service in the form of Yoga Maya. So our business is not to fight with Maya or do anything with Maya, but our business is simply to become engaged in devotional service. Then Maya will do her duty. Huh? Maya is a devotee. Maya is a devotee. Huh? You are not my Maya. Why? Yes, but there is a discrimination in spiritual nature. The spiritual nature also has variety, right? Parashya shaktir vividhaiva shruyate. Krishna's internal potency also has got different aspects. First of all, a devotee does not think that he is a devotee. Right? So to say that I am a devotee, so I am equal to Maya, I think it's a wrong logic. The main thing is that, yes, you are an aspiring devotee, I am also an aspiring devotee. So we are helping each other, right? But Yoga Maya is a personality. In Maya means they are in Krishna's external energy. When we say that somebody is in Maya, we mean that he is completely controlled by Krishna's external energy. So Maya is a person. You see, Maya, the material, Maya, Mahamaya, the controller of the material nature, she is manifest in the form of Durga, right? She has 10 hands. In her 10 hands, she has 8 weapons. And in one hand, she is holding a trident. In the 9th hand, she is holding a trident. And in the 10th hand, she has a snake. That is the form of Mahamaya. But the form of Yoga Maya has 8 hands instead of 10. And what she does not have is the snake and the trident. She does not inflict threefold miseries upon the living entity. And the snake is symbolic to time. With time, she catches everyone. Right? But the ultimate form of Maya, Yoga Maya, is actually in Vrindavan, in the form of Purnamashi. She is an old lady. Her hair is all white, and she wears a red cloth, red sari. And when somebody wants to go to Vrindavan, she is the first one who actually greets or encounters with. And Yoga Maya, this Vrindadevi, Purnamasi Devi, she makes, she decides whether somebody should be, how somebody will be engaged in Krishna's pastime. There's a very nice story. The Yoga Maya is called Aghatan Ghatan Potiyoshi. And she can make impossible possible. Right? And she is doing that. She can transform in Vrindavan, she can transform the day into night and night into day. She can make the new moon, turn the new moon into full moon and make Krishna perform his rasa dance. She does all these wonderful arrangements. And another one, and some other wonderful arrangements also she makes, is like, once Kamsa became very upset that all his friends were killed by Krishna. Like, he sent one after another, Putana, Aghasur, Bakasur, Trinavartasur, and they all were killed. So Krishna thought that, Kamsa thought, that I will go and kill Krishna. So Kamsa came to Vrindavan. And as Kamsa came to Vrindavan, he saw this old lady, Purnamashi. So Kamsa asked, where is the house of Nanda Maharaj? So Purnamashi, she immediately responded by saying that, oh, you rascal, you have come here to cause trouble to Krishna. So Purnamashi grabbed Kamsa by his hair and dipped him in a well, and Kamsa immediately transformed into an old, old woman, a very old woman. And so Kamsa could not even stand up. He was finding it difficult to stand up. And so Purnamashi told the gopis, the gopis were there, said, see, we got a new arrival here. So the gopis asked, so what can he do? So Purnamashi said, I don't know what she is capable of doing. You all try him out, what he is capable of, what kind of service he is capable of rendering. Then the gopi said, okay, let him make cow dung cakes. Let her make cow dung cakes. Now they are cowherd people. Even the child knows how to make cow dung cakes, you see. So, but Kamsa didn't know how to make cow dung cakes. So they said that this woman is totally useless. How did he, why did he come to Vrindavan? How he managed to enter into Vrindavan? So they started teasing her, and some started pulling him by his hair or her hair, and some started slapping him on the face that you are totally useless. And then Kamsa started crying. He said that I made the biggest mistake in my life. Please let me go. I'll never come back. So Purnamashi said that you promise that you'll never come back? Then Kamsa said, yes, I am twisting my ears, I'm twisting my nose to take a vow. Then Purnamashi dipped her again in the pond, in the well. And then Kamsa came back, got back his original Kamsa form. And he ran for his life, and he never came back to Vrindavan. Mahamaya and Yogamaya. Mahamaya has got 10 arms, and Yogamaya has 8. Huh? Yeah, she gets it from Shiva. Shiva is Mahamaya's husband. Huh? Yes, you can say that. No, actually, Yogamaya also is with Lord Shiva in Vaikuntha Loka. Sadashiva. Yeah. Brahmananda Brahma? Yes. Which comments? Oh. I see. Yeah. No, I never said that. I said with intelligence, at least we can understand that we are spirit souls. Yeah, the thing is, well, you can say that, but that is spiritual intelligence that engages us in devotional service. And in order to become engaged in devotional service of Krishna, we have to understand that Krishna is a person, right? You see, I mean, one can, with intelligence, one can understand that Krishna is a person. But my point again was that with intelligence alone, we cannot perceive Krishna. It needs something more, something beyond intelligence, and that is devotion. The only qualification to perceive Krishna is devotion to Him. Yes. Right. Yes, but you have to understand that you have certain amount of devotion involved in it. To receive the knowledge from a bona fide source and to have faith in that knowledge. So That is, you know, intelligence mixed with devotion. You see, just intelligence alone may just plunge us into Brahma Jyoti, not beyond that. But in order to go beyond Brahma Jyoti, we have to accept devotion. We must take the help of devotional service. Beg your pardon? Yeah. Subtle, actually subtle body carries the spirit soul. Oh, I see. You mean when after death, or well, when the astral travel as such. Yeah, at that time the spirit soul is linked with the body, as they say, with a silver thread or golden thread. The link is there, and that energy is supplied by the spirit soul to keep the body functioning. But at death, you see, the total link is actually severed, and then the spirit, that's why the body becomes dead. I think I'll stop now. Already quite late. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.